Boom, just like that, we start, Jake. You like that?
Yeah, just snap right to it. Keep me on my toes.
First time meeting you, before we started rolling, I said, how's life? And you said, peachy. And then you were like, how about you? And I was like, yeah, peachy. And I was like, well, it depends what day it is. Sometimes it's peachy and sometimes it's not.
Amen. It's not always best to keep a mask on, you know? just rip me out.
Right?
Tear the flesh off, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So you were saying you lived here in Vegas a long time.
Yeah, born and raised, 31 years now, but who's counting? Definitely not me anymore.
When you see the traffic that exists now, are you like, what the hell? Or
oh, I can go into a whole exposition
about
it. I mean, this town is, oh my God, this influence of just the West is coming in here. This used to be just this cowboy paradise. I mean, we're like country bumpkins out here.
Yeah.
I mean, we're like Floridians without the ocean.
Yeah.
Growing up here, we're just kind of out in the desert blowing crap up. I can't. Can I swear or no?
Of course. Right, fuck okay, yeah. Let it fly.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, you know, my dad was a big redneck, so all we did was break shit out in the desert, blow shit up, get the guns out, and now a lot of this thing is really changing. You know, a lot of this dynamic is going away. A lot of the Karens are out, people living out in the suburbs on the edge of town. You know, I can't even go rip around in our Jeep, you know, without someone complaining that, oh, there's too much dust in the air. And I'm like, man, these are the wrong kind of snowflakes moving out to the desert. I just don't get it. You know, this town for me has always been a little rough around the edges. And that's kind of what the spirit that I try to imbue into my life. And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of that is, again, kind of dispersed, and the traffic, you know, the clutter, you know, I mean, I'm glad that there's going to be opportunities in this city for people, but in the end, I'm like, maybe I'm just getting old enough to just think of the good old days, and I think that's just the rite of passage through time, you know, where I'm just going to look back with rose-colored glass and be like, wow, it was way different back then. But you know, I mean, I grew up on the edge of town, so my like Durango was still like being built.
Uh-huh.
When I was first here, I don't know if you, like, so right before Summerlin, that was right when they were breaking ground in the early 90s and starting to develop that area. Otherwise, you know, I had a horse, I had dirt bikes.
Wow.
I rode out to the mountains, you know, there was ranches everywhere. I mucked stalls, you know, and now look at us, you know, it's a lot of that culture is diminished. And it's been replaced with, this Babylon of sorts.
Yeah. I remember being here in like maybe 01 and going to Whiskey Sky at Green Valley Ranch, the club there. Do you remember that back in the day?
I mean, you got a little time on me. I was 2001. I was like 9.
Oh,
so
yeah, you weren't clubbing yet.
No.
But I remember like I remember we were like, where are we going? Like it felt like we were going in the middle of nowhere. And I remember it was like a $55 cab ride. And we were like, what the fuck are we doing going to a club out here? And this was before there were clubs in every single casino. It wasn't like that back then, you know?
Just the buffets. That's all you had.
Yeah. And I remember like that seemed like Green Valley seemed so far away. And now like I've lived here for 7 years. Like it's not even a bit like it wasn't even a big deal.
Yeah, after they dropped the 215, it kind of connected a lot of things.
Right.
You know, it didn't feel like things were so dispersed, you
yeah.
know, and with all, again, there's still horse property and stuff like that, but again, all of it's been switched out for suburbs.
So, yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the run-of-the-mill where we're going. So,
would you want to live anywhere else?
Okay, so I've ventured around the world a lot, and a lot of people ask me this because I have spent a lot of time, you know, abroad, Africa, Europe, Asia, and, you know,
living?
Not living, but spending
extended time.
So, I've probably, over the last 8 years, I say, you know, probably about 3.5, 4 of it has been just kind of running around the world.
Really?
And, you know, there's something about maybe not just Vegas. I mean, Vegas does have this interesting personality to it that it kind of excites the soul and devours it all at the same time.
Yep.
So it kind of keeps you going. It's riveting stuff, you know. It never stays stale. There's always something new. I mean, it's home for me too. And it's kind of warped my mentality about how the rest of the world worked until I got out into it. And one of the coolest things out here is that the desert is impeccable for me. I think I like that emptiness. I like that ability to just kind of jump off 30 minutes out and I'm in the middle of nowhere, it feels a little bit more freeing. I don't like big metropolises or things, and I'm not a boonie guy. I'm not going to go live out in a trailer out in the middle of nowhere.
You're not an off-the-grid guy?
Yeah, no, not yet. Not yet.
Not yet. Oh,
I mean, COVID, maybe I was like, if I can grow a full beard, maybe that's my time. But until then, I think I'm safe to say that I like to draw a healthy line between, you know, the rural part of myself is also the urbanite.
Yeah.
Because I'm literally, I would feel like I'm sitting on that fence for my entire life of doing both wild things, and the polarity there is wild sometimes. But yeah, I think Vegas is going to be at least my long-term home for now. You know, I'm really going to double down, and, you know, I'm growing a business. I'm taking on new opportunities, you know, and I've really invested a lot of my, not only myself, my soul, everything into the city. So at least for the long story longer, I think this is going to be home for now.
What's the business you're growing?
So we just kind of launched this business called Discover It Yourself as of January. It was a long process of, you know, background checks, getting proper licensing permits and all of that jazz, and we finally got our brick and mortar up, and it's essentially a car rental agency, but also adding in a level of adventure. So we like to kind of give our guests some tailored experience where maybe you're coming in from out of town, which most people are out here, and they don't know the way of the land. You're not going to be scouring forums and things like that, but you want to do something unique and that's something that's a little out of your comfort zone, but not too much. So we try to enable people to kind of utilize that by utilizing our equipment, our Jeep, our knowledge of this local area where the folks can kind of get out and explore. From, you know, secret coves down by the lake or by the river where you can go paddleboarding, or maybe you want to go stargazing. A lot of, you know, people that live in the city never really been out. So I give out like really cool, unique little locations where, you know, maybe you never even thought of it, but I want to kind of take that Pinterest idea of your life,
yep,
and bring it to the forefront and make it possible. And like I said, enabling people, hence the name. We call it Discover It Yourself because it's still DIY. You know, you're still going out and you're making that commitment to go explore, but you got a little bit of hand holding along
right.
the way. Yeah.
Yeah. So is this kind of like, do you remember those colored rocks? You know what
yeah,
I'm talking
yeah.
about? Are they still there?
Yeah, they're still up. Yeah.
So I remember
our weird little Stonehenge.
Right. So I remember I wanted to go see those once. And it was one of those things like, I know you pass it when you're on, but then I can never find like, what's the exit, whatever. And mm-hmm. so one day I committed, like, this is like in 2020 mm-hmm. when I was bored,
yeah.
right? I was like, there's nothing new. I was like,
idle
let's go
hands.
See those fucking rocks,
yeah.
right? So we get off. I forgot where, like, maybe we got off over by the South Point or something. We ended up on, like, what feels like a service road. Or I guess
that's
it's Las Vegas Boulevard.
Right, yeah,
it's
yeah.
Las Vegas Boulevard. But it's like, there's so many, in going to do that, there's so many, like, dirt roads that, like where do these go? That no one is, A, most people don't want to take their car up that road, right? Like, I'm not taking my car up that road. And then, like, even if I did have a car to take up that road, what the fuck is up there? And, like, am I going to get, I picture, like, gates and a do not enter, no trespassing, and all of a sudden there's guys with guns or something. I don't know. It's like, you navigate through that stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, like a lot of this area around Southern Nevada is all BLM. So in the before time, we'll say before, you know, the Mecca of Vegas, what it is today, all of these places was just kind of go explore free willy-nilly. And you can just grab a car and go. I mean, obviously, you just need a little clearance and maybe 4x4, and you can kind of just go. That's not necessarily right. a luxury that most people get to experience in their state. But Nevada, because of the crazy world that we live in, most of it is owned by the government. And most of the time, they're like, go out, especially where you're talking about. Everyone
yeah.
goes to shoot out there. So that's
right.
like a huge area one that people are just blowing up.
I have been out there to
yeah,
shoot right
yeah,
over
there.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
Take that.
But that seems that I kind of didn't like it. Like, because I heard gunshots coming from some other spot. And I was like, are these guys, like, do they know where we are? Like, are we all facing the same way? Are they on the other side? Am I going to get hit? Like, I didn't know what the fuck was going on.
It's very unregulated.
Right.
Very unregulated. And, you know, for a while when the population wasn't so big, it wasn't really a big concern. You know?
Right.
But now that it's super dense, it's changing that dynamic a little bit. You know, eventually, these places are going to have to be tailored to some extent, in
right.
my opinion. Because especially because they're starting to build out there now.
Yeah.
Like Sloan is all starting to get bought out, and you know they're going to have to keep developing all the way out past, you know, way past the city limits where we are right now.
Now, do you take people out by Red Rock also? Because it seems like there's a lot there, or that's kind of already...
So, yeah, that's already kind of explored and things. We want to shine lights on things that haven't been seen.
Yeah.
So it's more of these hidden gems. Again, like these local secrets that we... That's why we feel like we're a little bit more of a higher-end experience, because not only you're not going on the beaten path, you know, you're going away from it a little bit, not right. so much where you're ever going to feel unsafe. And we're like, hey, we want to get you away from where other people have, you know, tried and true and things. I'm like, let's show the unseen beauty of this place. I'm a big nature guy myself. You know, I've been up to like Mount Everest. I've, you know, I went through the jungles of the Congo, man. Like,
hold on.
Yeah.
Did you hike up Mount Everest like a psycho?
Well, I that's a long story, and we can circle back to that.
Okay,
because there's a lot of tidbits in there.
All right, we're gonna circle back to Mount Everest.
Yeah,
was the other one you just mentioned?
Congo.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. But you know, shameless self plug there. But yeah, I mean, I really have had all of these unique experiences that I've experienced abroad. Even sometimes where I've been like, I'm fucked.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I'm making it out of it. So I felt like these were instrumental in my character growth. And I started my first company before Discover It Yourself, called Adventures Anonymous, during the pandemic. So during the pandemic, I was throwing crazy parties and events as kind of like, you know, like the Footloose. Like I wanted people to out having fun. And, you know, a lot of people were like, hey, well, you know, you got to... 6 feet and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, hey, I'm taking people camping. We went to the lake. I took people traveling abroad. I even took, J-Rock down
really?
And Strauss to old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had a crazy little event where we all went down in a gold mine, abandoned gold mine, where I put this projector on the wall with the Goonies. So we watched the Goonies in this cave, essentially, when we had this $2,500 like Spanish Imbirico ham that we lowered into this cave with an extension cord that Bizarre Meats was just throwing away, because that was when all the casinos were shutting down. And J-Rock was like, you're always doing these crazy things, like I'm bringing Strauss and take us on a journey. They are all doing shrooms. We're all in this little cave, and you know, everyone was just having a great time. And you know, essentially, that's kind of what birthed this whole idea. The genesis of it was like, hey, like I can do this for a living.
Right.
I can just do cool, epic things and bring epic experiences to people with just my creative mind. So everything that we've curated so far is just some things that either they're just a smidge off of simple, but it done in a unique way,
yep.
or something that's just a weird little brainchild that I feel adds a lot of value to people's lives. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. So it's
all
like
being
kind
paid
of,
to do your hobby, essentially, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know, as you know, with the invention of the internet, a lot of people have been able to do that. And, you know, it's always been a very big, you know, heartstring on me to be able to show people something and really get something that is impactful. And not only is impactful, but the takeaway is just like, wow, serenity. Like
yeah.
I have found a little bit of peace amongst all of this chaos. And especially being in Vegas, where at every moment there's an indulgence. Like, not to say that I'm part of the counterculture, but I also want to remove that and just have you be extremely present, feeling something genuine.
Yeah. I'm sure this is going to end up as a be careful what you wish for, but I'm gonna wish it. In all your travels in the Vegas nature scene, I am dying to see a mountain lion.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, well.
I don't want to be eaten by a mountain lion, but I'd like to see him.
Yeah, I mean, there's not like a
Have you seen any?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
That's like the great white buffalo.
Right.
Man. Great white buffalo. Great white buffalo.
Like yeah. sometimes on my, like we have the Ring camera, yeah. right? Sometimes I like last year, there was a thing like mountain lion spotted on like in Summerlin, whatever. And I was like, fuck, do I just
yeah,
jump in my
Bishop
car?
Yeah, Gorman.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. I wanted to, because I'm not far from there. I was like, do I just jump in the car right now and try to see this fucking thing? But then I was like, but then what? I don't know.
I mean, they're normally not down this low. They're
right.
normally like upper elevation because there's not a lot of like large game for them to eat.
Right.
But like, you know, that's why Vegas is super dynamic too, because you do have Mount Charleston, which is like, you know, upwards 6, 7, 8, 9,000 feet where you can see wildlife like
right.
that. And then you come down in the desert where you're like, all right, I can see a mountain lion and a tortoise in the same area.
Right.
And that's just, It's a really unique ecosystem. That's why it's like, man, there's so much weird wildlife and how it all interacts. And, you know, you can go into the snow today and then you're out jet skiing tomorrow. This is a weird part of this whole town, you know, again, capitalizing on
so
that.
So can we go try to find a mountain lion?
Yeah, let's just...
We bring guns to this party just in case, though,
right? Yeah, we can wrap our arms
up
in bacon and maybe some leather.
Oh, great.
Just,
yeah, you're psycho. Yeah.
You know, like,
that's you customizing the experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be the fall guy.
Right.
I'm
okay.
Quick. You know, I'll put the trainers on. You know, I've been training for this moment my entire life. Hence, like, going to Everest, everything. I can run away from a mountain
lion. You haven't lived until a mountain lion gnaws on your arm full of bacon.
Yeah,
you know?
You kind of want to, like, bite it on the ear and subdue it a little bit. I mean, I don't know if PETA watches this, so maybe we'll have to eliminate some of this.
Right.
We got to edit it out in post. But we would take all things necessary to observe a mountain lion without endangering
it. Right. I like it.
I mean, it's like you want to feel that fear a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a little taboo. Right?
Yeah, I see some videos sometimes of hikers that I actually just posted one the other day, this crazy one. They were in Arizona and a mountain lion, two guys. And the guy that has the camera on this mountain lion comes out of nowhere and his buddy's like up against this rock like it didn't see it. And then you see his buddy pull his gun out just in case. And like props to the guy that he didn't. I'll actually try to find the clip and send it to you, Jory, and you can insert it into the episode. The guy like took the gun out and like this cat like was running up and around and like he was like out of his mind doing crazy shit. And the guy didn't shoot him. Like, he could have taken the shot just out of panicking, but he's probably been there, done that before, because he was just like, I'm just going to chill. And he just chilled, and, like, that was it. It's just a quick, like, six-second clip. But, man, I'd be shitting.
I mean, there's, like, those... When the animals are big and when you feel like you're not on the top of the food chain anymore, you start doubting yourself really quick. I mean, I've seen... So, I've known mountain lions, but I've been, like... So a bear in a glacier kind of got close to me, but it seemed a little bit more domesticated. So I wasn't feeling like I was like, he's close enough to do something, but I feel like, you know, you just kind of make yourself big. Like I just fall onto my Boy Scout training.
Right.
I'm like, all right, just make yourself big. You know, I didn't have any bear mace or bear grenade, but I'm like, you know what? I guess I'm that willing idiot sometimes. Like most of the time I feel pretty confident if I'm in a wildlife encounter. The one thing I almost back in Everest when a yak almost killed me.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was this?
So I was on the trail up to Everest Base Camp, and there was like a stampede of yaks, and I was just getting onto the bridge, and I didn't really have any space to go. So there was about probably like 40 head of them. They kind of they graze on these. Rice terraces and stuff. So they also are kind of like an instrumental part of the well-being of the villagers and stuff, because up there in this region they don't slay anything, they don't kill plants, and they don't kill animals. So they to keep warm during the winter, they take the yak shit, dry it out on the. They pay a guy like a nickel a day or a quarter a day, whatever it is. I adjust for inflation for whatever.
Yeah.
But they burn yak shit in furnaces, and it works like a log. So these are really like they don't eat them, they don't slay them, but now they're just up there providing a warmth source, which is a crazy thing about. Yeah. I didn't know that until it essentially saved my life. But yeah, these things are barreling down at me, and you know. I'm sitting here looking at probably a cliff of, let's say, about like 500 meters, something like that, or 1,500 feet. And it's just sheer as hell. And I end up having to come down, grab on to these bushes and their roots while I'm holding on to the side of this build.
And freezing.
Yeah. Well, not yet.
Okay.
This was still like, so you kind of hike up for about a week, week and a half, which is the kind of weird, you start off in a... kind of a jungle setting.
Yeah.
Depending if you start, you can start 2 weeks back and you really got to hike. But I opted in for the crazy flight, which is in the Lukla Airport, which is the most dangerous airport in the world, mind you. You could pull up a clip of that or anything.
I see. That's the one they land. It's a short landing.
Yeah, it's just straight into a mountain.
Right.
And literally, they rip into this mountain and then they essentially whip the e-brake like they're Dominic Toretto. And throw your luggage out on the damn runway and just peel off and go straight back out. And it's just like these guys are just like hopped up on Mountain Dew or something, because these guys are just riding these crazy, crazy winds that are coming in there. And it's just exciting as hell. And that's kind of, I was a junkie for that. So, you know, action junkie kind of makes a lot of sense.
For sure.
Yeah. And I hiked up from there. With that point, it's still relatively warm. And then you get up into that, you know, about 17,000 feet. And that's where it gets a little cold, especially in February when I was up there.
So how far up did you go?
So I went to Everest Base Camp. And then because to summit, you have to pay for an expensive permit. That's kind of their chief income. Nepal is a really one of the poorest nations in the world. And this was right after the massive earthquake. I believe 2016, may have to fact check that. But I was there, you know, when the devastation was still very much impacting Kathmandu and throughout the nation. When I got up there, it was January, and I kind of got there by choice. I mean, by random anyway. I flipped the coin when I was in Vietnam, and I was like, all right, I'm either going to chase this girl down or I'm going to go to Kathmandu. And flipped the coin, Kathmandu. And the stars kind of aligned, and I got up to this trek where I was like, all right, I didn't know I could spend like about $1,500 to go up see Everest. I was like, let's do it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, I had no gear or nothing. I rented boots, a sleeping bag. And, you know, sometimes like I just got the cheapest shit ever. And it was just all will or ignorance or just trying to prove something, more or less probably that, especially as a young man. I was just like jerking off in my sleeping bag to stay warm, not to completion though, because that would be terrible. And then you have to sleep with that the entire time. Like, you're not cleaning yourself for about 2 weeks. So you kind of just you shell up to this idea that like, I'm committed to this whole thing. And then you're eating, you're eating like jam and flatbread. And like, you're like, hey, any luxury I'm eating right now, they pay a motherfucker to hike in on a pallet strapped to his forehead, and he walks this fucking shit to these villages. I shit you not. They kill it all in front of the sacred door or the entry into the park.
Right.
Chickens, everything. And then this motherfucker, toe strap, like he's a fucking Ford Raptor, just sitting here walking for days. Going
really?
Uphill, switchbacks. Like, this same motherfucker is passing me while I'm getting gassed, you know? These are Olympic athletes, all right? The Sherpa are an incredible group of individuals. Like, it's just mind-boggling. You just sit there, like, complaining, and you're like, man, I can barely breathe.
Right.
Guy comes up carrying, like, 200 pounds of noodles, and you're like, Jesus Christ, what am I doing with my life? Like, this guy's, and he's got, like, a permanent curve in his spine. At that point, so he looks like the letter L, just kind of like he's been carrying shit his entire life. And like I said, this is a huge tourist element of Nepal, which is, you know, this is how they fund a lot of their GDP, you know. So it's a pretty price tag to climb up Everest. It was, I think, at the time it was about 10-11 grand.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so you had to have a guide and oxygen and things like that. You can go against it, but then it's like this whole process. Like they have people stationed at the bottom and kind of make sure that you know what you're getting into. And again, it's a huge driver for them revenue wise. And I was up there at base camp, and there was a South Korean team trying to summit, and there was also a guy that a Chinese man that died from an aneurysm.
A lot of people died doing that, right?
Yeah, not even just there. Like the guy died on the way up with me. So he was
really?
Yeah. So it's a weird. Every about 1,800 feet, you're supposed to stop and climatize to that.
Yep.
That element, you know, or to that elevation. And this guy, Chinese guy, we were kind of like maybe 3 or 4 hours away from each other. He just kept pushing. And I remember I was walking up to one of the small villages, and I heard a chopper coming in, and they were picking this guy up, and he had an aneurysm, like bleeding in his head, like, you know,
just from the elevation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
too quick.
Some people can do it, especially when you're used to being in the mountains and stuff. And for me, this is not sea level, so it's enough where I get a little bit of an edge. But you know, after like 10,000 feet, it's starting to hit you. Every step, it's thundering. You know, you can't even laugh without feeling like a goldfish out of water. It starts getting a little intense. This guy had his aneurysm, and, you know, he died on the way down to Kathmandu.
Fuck. Fuck.
They flew him out, and you know, most of the time you just kind of die on the mountain, you know, unless they can save you.
Right.
You know? So they tried to save him, and my guide ended up telling me later, and he found out when he talked to some of the other guides in the area, they're like, yeah, he died on the way down. Kind of just made it a lot more like real,
right?
You know, especially with the lack of hubris I had. This was also coming off of I hit a major injury, which kind of stopped my career as a mood director here. I broke my leg in Red Rock, and I got helicopter lifted out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The memoirs are coming, but we can that's definitely a weird story in itself. But yeah, when I got to base camp, I didn't feel like it was enough. If 55,
you didn't feel like you accomplished enough.
No, you feel like, because you're right there,
right? So you're like, come this far, what am I doing?
Yeah, I mean, you see other people climbing, you're like, man, if I had that money right now, but it's just, it felt more like ego, you know, like I didn't care about my life at all. I was just like, I wrung what I brung, you know. I got sober, and I was just, you know, I was in Vietnam when I flipped that coin. I just spent about 3 months riding from the China border all the way down to Ho Chi Minh just by myself. My first motorcycle I ever bought was in off of some junk dealer in Hanoi for like $200. And I just spent 3 months essentially learning how to drive on road. I've been riding dirt bikes backcountry out here. Definitely not the same thing. But that was what I was coming off the heels of life and death situations, getting crashes, and now I'm up in Everest, and I'm like, this ain't enough. Like, I was just kind of trying to get tapped into something. And I was definitely brought into the fold, because there is an additional thing. I was like, I talked to my guy after we got up to the top, and I'm like, what's the most sketchiest thing we can do right now that could still, that could really check my boxes here, because I'm like, I gotta have a story to tell after this, and me just walking up here doesn't feel like it. So he's like, yeah, you can go hit the Chola Pass, and that's where things got a little interesting.
Really?
Yeah. So essentially it's like another kilometer up, so that's like a half mile for I go back and forth but so you go about another kilometer up. It's about like a grade like this, just terrible, just ice, black ice, shale. It's non-composed at all. There's no more. You're kind of just chiseling your way up the mountain. You got your crampons on, and crampons are like the big ice boots that you can. I had the cheapest ones because that's just the way I was rolling. I had like $3 ones, which by all means, pay for the extra good ones, because these were shit. And probably would have
what
led
are the
to
good
my
ones?
Death.
How much are the good ones?
You could, depending on where you're at, like if you're buying it from like North Face or something, you could be paying like $50-$75.
Okay.
I mean, some of them just go right on top of your boot, but they can secure. Like these were just like a couple rubber bands and some tacks. Like that's what I was rolling with.
Right.
And like I said, just kind of, and my $1 a day sleeping bag that I was renting, and some dude's boots, and some German guy gave me all of his clothes that didn't fit me worth a shit either when I was up here. So I'm just looking like a rag doll, man. And at the time, I had my head scalped into just a little monk sprout too.
Right.
So I know there's a lot of tangents here, but I'll try to wrap this
no,
up.
No, this is good.
All right. So I get to the top of where this glacier is, and this is the Chola Pass. Like essentially I'm...
Come in front. Get in
all right.
Front.
Yeah. So I'll go like this. All right. So here's Everest Base Camp, right? You're seeing all of... You're right at the foot of Everest, and you go backtrack a little bit, and you can go up a little bit further, and then you go over this glacier, and mind you, it's frozen ice, like an ice wall that you have to kind of scale across, right?
You're insane.
Yeah, and I'm just a...
Windy?
Never done,
is it windy?
It's windy. This is the worst time of year. They're like, he said that there's not a real good chance that we can do it unless someone's already broken through the pass because it's been snowing, which that's a whole... I almost got
you need someone to have made a path for you, essentially.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's already kind of, because otherwise it's really debilitating to couldn't go through about 3 feet of snow.
Right.
And he says that there's supposed to be people, and they are
there's
ahead
just
of us.
Chalk outlines of people is all there is up there.
Petrified people. this
terrible.
Oh my God. This is So we get up to the ice scaling part, right? And I have these trekking poles, and you know they help you. You know, you're not just an old man; like it literally helps you just kind of work your way up the mountain. You know, you're just sitting here, da 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 da. And you know, at that time, I was pushed up against the ice right here, and you know, it started out about 3 feet of walking space, and it dwindled down to about one foot over the other. So you're doing 1 foot over the other, chest up against this ice wall with these trekking poles as the only means of keeping you from not sliding back, unless your crampons were good, which mine were not. I got about 40 pounds of gear, and I'm scaling on this wall, and I put too much weight on this trekking pole, and it snaps, and I fall backwards. And there's probably about a 9-foot luge, about 45-degree angle, just coming straight down to a ravine that's about 35 feet below me, just into a crevasse, you know, and I'm like, shit. I start sliding down this blue ice. And
oh, my God.
Get my legs off the ledge, and I grab the broken shaft, and I jam it into the ice as I slowly inch towards the end. And it's, like, cinematic. I'm like the discount version of Jake Gyllenhaal at this point. You know, if you've seen the movie, check it out. I mean, it's a little less hysterical because, again, they went up to the top, but this is my moment, okay? I'll fall on this sword. So I'm, like, literally, I'm about to die. There's no way they're going to be able to extract me, none of this. If I fall, I'm not wearing a helmet, I'm dead. And my Sherpa's about, like, 20 feet in front of me. Right, and he's scaling the same wall. We don't have the luxury of just being like Speedy Gonzalez and running back and saving my ass. So he has to come back. He's about like 10, 15 seconds. And I shit you not, my man. Like I had this this serenity moment where I was just like ready to let go. I was just like, I did it. Like I felt like, well, he finally checked that box to the point where I was like, hey, it's all good now. You know, I've been trying and trying to feel like my life needed to have this significance, this meaning, this, you know, this, and there's a whole lot of things to unpack with all of that. But that moment, I felt like this incredible warmth rolling through like all of my past memories and everything, all that cliche shit, like that just felt like, all right, here it is. This is how I go. I don't have to fight it anymore. This is just where I'm at. And, you know, as I kind of just in this weird state, I just feel his hands kind of grip on mine. And he just grabs me like this. And I'm sitting here just like, oh, I snap back into it. Like, all right, I got to fight for this still. And takes out a hatchet and just starts crushing the ice right between my arms just like this. He's got one hand. I'm grabbing onto his ankle. And he's just sitting with the hatchet just cutting all the ice because there's just no way I can get my feet back up. And I'm hanging off just off of this. One hand is on this, and the other is holding on to him.
Is your arms like shaking?
Yeah, I'm just holding
on
to him.
Are you screaming? Are you
calm? No,
no,
I'm just like, there's nothing. I'm just...
It is what it is at this point.
I'm just like, my face is just like...
And freezing.
Yeah, well, this is where it starts. Because at that time, like, all of the snow that I kind of slid off with got in all my layers. I didn't have any, like, real, like, no North Face shit. I just had, like, a bunch, like, a yarn fucking mitts on and, like, just... Completely unprepared for all of this, especially considering I didn't think I was going to get wet. So all that snow shovels on me. He saves me, pulls me back up. And, you know, I had snow in my bag, snow in my socks, and everything was just wet. And, like, up there, like, that's a death sentence. You know, like, if you're up there for, you know, especially during the sun coming down, you start freezing. I'm like, all right, you know, he pulled me out, and we couldn't waste too much time, but I had to, like, collect myself. And I'm, like, going through my bag, like, emptying out all the snow. Everything I have is wet. And I'm like, damn, dude, like, this is not a good position. You know, we thought at the time that someone already broke the pass, as I mentioned earlier. Those people come back down while I'm sitting there. They're like, no, we're not doing it. And I'm like, well, I'm not going back. I'm like, I'm going through, you know. So I, the only thing I had for food was two Wonder Bread bags, and I had some jam. So that was just like my only calories I was getting for most of the days was just that. And I just dump out the bread, and I didn't have anything dry, so I put the Wonder Bread bags around my feet so they'd stay sweaty. And just use the little twist tie to kind of keep it. So I'm just looking completely ridiculous. But he said that that's how you're going to keep your feet from, you know, falling off.
Right.
And at that time, you know, my gloves are soaked, so I can't really do anything. And I'm just like, all right. So my hands are kind of like frozen open. Miserable. Then the actual walk begins, you know, where I'm like walking through essentially at waist deep of snow for about 45 minutes across the rest of the glacier. God. There's supposed to be a
45 minutes feels like hours.
Oh, it's just pain, dude.
Right.
And the snow is just everywhere, and you're just kind of like, I'm just peaking on adrenaline because I'm like, all right, well, now I'm
regretting it at this point. Like, what the fuck did I do this?
Oh,
what am I doing?
I mean, yeah, you get a whole.
You talking to yourself?
Oh yeah, man, you're just running through that dialogue of like,
fuck my life, fuck
you know,
me.
Like, it seems so good of an ending, and then right. You're like, no, now I got to fight to survive, and then you're like, oh, you know, make part of you is like, maybe this is going to be a good story, and maybe this is just complete stupidity, and then I really,
it's a great story.
Yeah, I could yeah. really fuck my. I mean. When I broke my leg, I thought the same thing, you know, and like, it's like, well, why am I upping Annie? Because that was fucking terrible, terrifying as well. But at the same time, I'm like, it's going to be a fucking good story one day, you know? And this guy is like, literally, we're coming down the other side of the mountain, and these crampons that I had broke, and we get through this snow, and we're going down this shale and shit.
And is he struggling too?
No, he's a fucking...
He's used to... This is this like, guy, he calls this a Tuesday.
This guy's like the patriarch, dude.
Right.
This guy is like the... Like, I got lucky. Like, he was the most... Just everyone, like, worships
the guy. Speaks English?
Yeah, great English.
He's, like, motivating you and saying stuff. And...
Yeah, like, a little bit, like, not to a point... Like, he knew how... We interacted well. I was all bubbly and wild and, yeah, avant-garde. And he was, like, the stoic kind
right.
of... Like my, you know, the Uncle Iro of my expedition, yeah. If you've watched Avatar, that kind of shit, where we had this really great dynamic. And, like, there's a lot of stories that even led up to this of me just interacting with the local populace. And, like, they bring me back. We were drinking tea with some of the, you know, not away from all the tourists and shit like that. We would go in and I would cook and then I would teach them how to dance. Almost got raped by one of the big women. That's a whole nother story. Yeah, I know. She was 6'2". 200 pounds, like a linebacker, man. Wild. We won't go into that just yet, but most people won't believe me, you know, but this is the one of the best stories I have, man. And I'll snap back. So we're going through the clouds now, right? And the clouds are just pouring over us. You can't, visibility shit. You could probably see about 10 feet in front of you. And the only thing that's marking is the little stacks of stones, you know, the cairns or whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry if I butchered the enunciation there. But, yeah, you see, all you have is these, and you can only see, you know, to the other side of the room, you know, and then you're like, Jesus Christ. And I'm soaked, and I'm just kind of trekking down the mountain, and there's no path, and I don't have crampons. So I keep sliding about 6 feet every 30 seconds. So I just go, oh, my God. And I'm making my way downtown. Walking fast, and I'm homebound. You know, I'm sitting here just barreling down this mountain, and I'm like, all right, there's a village at the bottom, so I'm good. No. Sun's down. Village is empty. And I'm like, fuck, what do we do? Like, this is the time of year where it becomes, there's no tourists that do this pass. So these smaller villages that normally house, like, a tea house or something where you can kind of warm up or sleep if you want, is gone, vacant. You know, the only way we could do something is if we break into somewhere and call it a night, which is not his MO.
Right.
Which is not my guide's MO. He was
right.
Like, we'll just go to the next one. And the next one became the next one, and then the next one. And we end up hiking for about another 3 hours.
Wow.
In the dark with no lamps, no headlights, no nothing. And I just kind of stayed with him. I mean, I'd be walking across the frozen river, fall, my leg would go in the water. You know, I was going through snowdrifts and everything else because it was just no one was up there.
And I don't think any of us can understand the level of freezing.
Yeah, it was
right.
It was
like
awful. I mean,
lip quivering, yeah. All that shit, blue, you're blue.
I mean, Minnesota gets pretty cold. So, right. Like, you know, if you live in, like, Duluth or something, you know, shout out to my ex-girlfriend, you know, good for you to live up there. Like, that's crazy. But, yeah, I mean, it's bitter fucking cold and you can't breathe. That's right. The biggest thing. You know, oh, the cold
it's
is,
so cold you can't breathe. And well, the altitude.
Well, the altitude is a way bigger, I would say, the bigger enemy of you.
Right.
Like, it's cold.
And no energy, right?
You have no energy. You know, you can't breathe. Your oxygen levels are just so damn low that you're like, your muscles are getting so fatigued.
Your body's trying not to die.
Yeah, and you're just sitting here just like, well, fuck it. I'm doing it for the plot. I'm doing it for the story, man. And, you know, and now I don't want to die because I don't want to go out like no bitch, you know? And, you know, I fucking walk another 3 hours through the dark and I shit you not. There is this little fire that you can see in the distance in one of these little tea houses. And I pass the fuck out. My body gives up. I come to, he dragged me there. And I woke up to that furnace covered in blankets. Someone changed me, thank God, you know. God bless him. And, you know, burning yak shit to stay alive.
Wow.
Literally just, like, I put my hands...
Does that smell, by the way?
No. It's weird that it doesn't.
Okay. Because I mean, it's dried.
It's just dried and grass. So yeah. So, like, you know, they pay a guy just to go pick up these patties and, like, lay them out on the stone walls and shit. And then they serve it up like a pancake right into the fucking fire. And it's just kind of like wood. Huh. You know, I'm like, all right. And, like... Literally, I could have put my hand on that furnace for about like 3 hours and it wouldn't have hurt me. I mean, it would have probably burned my skin, but I wouldn't have felt anything. And I ended up having full mobility of my hands and feet, and I got super lucky. Because
you could have lost fingers or toes.
Yeah,
or...
I mean, it was fucking a mad dash.
Would you do it again?
I mean,
so weird that it's not an automatic no. It's not an automatic no makes you psycho.
I mean, the thing is, I was... ignorant. Again, the way that I was traveling when I was a young man is a lot different.
Maybe how old were you when this happened?
25.
Okay. What do you know?
31.
Well, Jesus, that's not that long. Okay.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Maybe you know. No, maybe it was 24.
So oh, well, that's different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, look, like I've had a wild.
So you'd do it again, but you would do it smarter.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, my buddy would get a kick out of this because I'm always the unprepared one. He's the anal retentive son of a bitch that he has to have 100 different gadgets to do one thing. And I'm more like throw a bag and figure it out. And, you know, as I've been rewarded with my stupidity, I've had to make some corrections in that where I'm like, I'm not going to go full tilt, but I'm going to kind of refine my process a little bit.
Okay, do me a favor. Do not, if you do it again, do not bring David Kagan with you because we need him as an investor.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah,
so we
yeah.
can't have you putting him in these holy shit, am I going to die situations.
We've already talked about this in-depthly of how he's like, I'm a dad now. I used to do dumb shit. And he goes, you know, you just crank out a kid and that all changes.
Right.
You know, you sit yeah. here and you're like.
No more dumb shit.
Yeah, you can't do dumb shit when you're a dad. At least what I've heard. But
and now you broke your leg in Red Rock after all this?
No, before.
Before this?
Yeah.
Oh, you're so
crazy. I was like 23.
Because that wasn't enough. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Well, the Vine was huge back then. So I can date myself a little bit. That was when, like, before Instagram was really hitting it up with the
right.
with
yeah.
videos.
7 second
reels.
Vine yeah. or 12, whatever they were.
And
yeah.
GoPro came out. And
right.
I was like, dude,
this
I'm
is
the
for
most
you.
Gnarly dude that they're going to see out here. Maybe not gnarly, but like dumb. Like a dumbass, because I grew up just watching Jackass.
Are you one of those rock climbers without any stuff too?
Yeah, but no.
Okay,
that's
a little crazy.
Yeah, those guys are, but there's an educated risk there. Like they understand, they've calculated it, and they can do it. Like me, I was just like, fuck it, I'm gonna try to jump from here to here, and
I think I'll make it.
I think I'll be all right. Was not all right.
That's how you broke your leg?
Yeah, I jumped about like 15, maybe 17 feet.
Like a running start type
no,
of deal?
Like
no,
like I was just up in the middle of nowhere, like off trail, just trying to get some really cool content with the GoPro I just got. Shout out to GoPro.
seriously?
No, I lost all the footage
no!
too. Yeah, but it was just, it wasn't even cool. It would have been like, you're like, you fucked up, man. You fucking idiot. Like, why would you, you're not, like, I literally jumped from like this, from this little platform, and I was like, there's this nice little gap about like 9 feet and then probably about 15, 17 foot drop. And I'm like, all right, if I hit it, kind of roll out a little bit, I'll be all right. But it was kind of in shadow, so it looked level, but it wasn't. So I came down all on my left leg. And, you know, I was right next to these rocks, and all I heard was, you know, audibly. Like, oh, no. And I've never broken a body part before then. And I'm like, oh.
That's not good.
I'm like, bro, like, this was before it gets worse.
Were you alone?
I had a buddy that was filming. So I tossed the GoPro down, like, watch this, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's looking at me, and I'm about, so that was about a 15-foot drop. I still had about 30 feet down to where he was at. And I had to kind of go elbow to elbow.
With a broken leg.
I didn't know if it was broken at this point.
It was just a fucked up leg at that point.
Yes.
We didn't know it was broken.
In the end result, it was a tibia and a fibula, complete fracture, and then multiple fractures throughout my ankle. But I climbed down. He tries to get me out, and we're like, hey, man, I can't keep my leg straight. And I'm like, I think I just twisted it at this point. And we get to some really hairy areas where he's trying to carry me, and I'm like, my leg is like an elephant trunk, just sticking out past his shoulder, just dangling right in front of him, you know, like hanging a carrot on a stick or something. And he's just looking at me, like, we're trying to get down there, and I'm using my hands to kind of support him from the back as we kind of inch lower and lower to get back to where the trail's at. And that doesn't happen because he slips, and he's a 200-pound dude, 6 foot, falls on my leg after I already broke it.
Oh, my just God.
All the
Stop.
Way. Yeah, and like the bones doesn't pierce the skin, but it sticks out, so you can just see
You're screaming with pain?
Oh, this is where I've lost probably about 5 years out of my life. That
okay.
was the most excruciating pain I've ever been in my life. I mean, and he didn't know what to do. He just
There's
started,
nothing
I'm screaming
to do.
At him, and he's holding on to me, and he goes, do you want me to pick you up or let you down? And I'm like, just fucking drop me! And he fucking lets me go, and I roll down about another 6 feet into a cactus.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, dude.
Look at them back there. They're like, white people are crazy.
This is what happens when you grow up. You don't grow up in a suburb, okay? This is stupid white people shit.
Holy shit.
And so he comes down, and I'm like, bro, like, I can't fucking move now. And I'm fucking bleeding
cactus
now.
Cactus yeah. fucked you up.
Oh, dude, I'm sitting here. It's tiny.
And that takes forever to pull that out. Those out, right?
Like, and I'm like, I'm fucking writhing in pain and adrenaline. I'm just like, I put on Johnny Cash, and I'm just like, yeah, dude, I'm fucking man, dude. I just watched 127 Hours, so I just start doing this fucking voiceover, just being fucking catty,
yep.
trying to get a hold of a ranger, and I'm like, yo, like, I need a stretcher because my broke ass can't afford a medevac. So just bring me a canteen. I had this all on film up until someone stole my laptop with everything on it. But I called a ranger, and I'm like, I'm the brokest motherfucker up on these mountains. Like, but I'm stuck. And he goes, all right, well, send your buddy down to the so he can show us where you're at. And I'm like, hey, don't send that fucking chopper. I'm like, I can't afford that shit. He goes, sir, we're going to do what we deem is necessary. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I start calling my family and shit to kind of let them know. I start with my ex-girlfriend at the time, a lot of those, if you can't tell. I'm like, yay, I did something dumb. She goes, the fuck you do? And I'm like, well, I broke my leg. I'm in the middle of nowhere, but I think I'm going to be all right. I'll let you know what hospital I'm going to. She's pretty much understands me at this point, so it's not a big shock. I call my dad, and this is how I know I'm my father's son, because I call him, and he goes, what the fuck you calling me for? I'm at work, bro. Like, start crawling. Like, that's literally verbatim what he said and just hung up the phone. And I'm like, great. You know, this is, I'm going to tack that in my bank. I'm like, all right, I can crawl out of here.
Right.
Just looking like Charlie, at Prince when Charlie Murphy beat his legs, just kind of coming out of here, like elbow, you know, army crawling and everything. And, you know, my boy, after like about an hour, my boy hasn't come back. I don't have service anymore. I'm just listening to Johnny Cash on my Bluetooth. And I hear the chopper come in. I'm looking up. I'm like, oh.
You knew it was for you instantly.
Well, they're just looking at me. It was like, oh, look at that idiot. You know? And
Are I'm they talking to you on like a loudspeaker kind
no,
of deal?
No. They like G.I. Joe their way down there. So they really? Can throw down their fucking cables and shit. And then they come down the mountain and then they splint me because I was in a pretty tough area where they couldn't get low enough. So they had to drop these guys in. I'm like, America, fuck yeah. You know, and I'm like, this is pretty cool.
It's pretty badass, right?
Yeah, and then they don't even put me on a stretcher. They're like, we don't have enough room for you because it was actually a firefighters, so they don't normally do this. But they're like, all right, well, we're going to have to hold you on the outside. And I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, well, you're going to sit on my lap, and we're going to stay clipped to a cable and fly about like 200 feet below the chopper.
Oh, my
just
God.
Connected to a cable. And I'm telling you right now, man, that the dude's name was Mike. He had the bluest eyes. Bluest eyes. Like a lake, man. And I'm like, bro, like, I would do this all again. I'm just going to let you know right now. And he goes, bro, don't tell me that kind of shit. And
wow.
The funniest part of it was just right after my birthday, and my boys got me a shirt that said, sorry, ladies, I suck dick. And I was donning this T-shirt during this whole thing, and he goes, I'm like, hey, I'll take this off so when the media comes out, you don't have to see me with this shit. So I like put it up in like a little knot, just so you know, he wouldn't have to feel that stress of
right.
being associated right. with me. So yeah, it was a hell of a daring rescue.
Do they bill you for the chopper?
No,
I was free chopper.
Free chopper.
Nice.
Free chopper, and they offered me there was a ambulance there, and I'm like, man, all this shit costs money. So my boy rolls up in his Jeep. And I hobble in there with a military splint on my leg, and I go get a big gulp. And then he drops me. He has to go to a night shift at PT's or something like that. Drops me off at Spring Valley Hospital, and he drops me off at the wrong wing. So there's no one in there, and I go and grab like an office chair, and I'm starting to like inch myself over to the emergency room, and all you hear is this dragging. Cross the floor, man. Some nurse comes and like sees me, rolls me straight into the ER because I'm bloody, mind
right,
you.
From a cactus.
Yeah, the splint on my leg, shirtless because it was a pretty profane shirt. I didn't want to walk around
right,
with
right.
that, you know, and or give anyone the wrong idea. And then they roll me into the ER, and I'm like, I didn't shred one tear until I saw that bill. Yeah. The ER bill. I was like, fuck, man, this sucks, dude. I hate healthcare.
Yeah.
But eventually I filed for Obamacare, and I was one of those ones that kind of like rallied right. through. I'm that lucky idiot.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Those are two.
So isn't renting cars for these amazing experiences just boring for you? Is it enough for you?
So, you know. That's the story that goes for me through my mind all the time. Like, you know, we'd even go and touch into the Congo, which is a little bit more recent years of, you know, where I got malaria and things like that. You know, I've just, again.
I got malaria in the Congo, me? Is that what
yeah,
just happened?
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
Oh, by the way, I got malaria. That one time at band camp.
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on with you, Jake?
I don't. Dude.
Okay, wait. So tell me about malaria in the Congo. Mosquitoes had their way with you.
Yeah. Well, you ever hear of an app called couch surfing?
No. Oh, yeah, of course. Couch surfing. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like yeah, Airbnb
sure,
for
sure.
free.
Yeah.
So this guy was riding a motorcycle. He wanted to do like a cross the world trip, and he was riding from Quebec to Patagonia, like that was his thing. And back then I was just the dancer, but this was like right when I broke my leg. It started all of this, so that's why I bring it into the fold, because break my leg was like this catalyst to kind of shine my light on the industry and be like, hey, like, what do I want? Because I couldn't dance anymore. I was like a rising star, you know.
Really?
Yeah I was literally starting to get like chiseled out, you know, like this identity of like being this pseudo guy that's like, all right, he's a fun dude, he has creativity, and I was like riding that wave, you
like
know?
In music videos and stuff, or
well, like with different like tour managers and
okay
stuff. I mean I was rubbing shoulders with like the elitists, with a lot of like DJs, hip-hop artists,
yep.
And like, you know, I crip walk with Ice Cube and D-Bob before he died, you know, and like just little things where I was never like putting myself out there, because I was always like a little nervous.
Yeah.
And like I was always like, I don't need to plug myself. I never really wanted it, but it started to become something that I was good at, you
yeah.
know. And when I broke my leg, I was like, dude, what do I want? Like, what am I about? Like,
yeah.
Am I one dimensional? Am I just this kind of industry fuckboy or what? And it changed my whole life. So one of the first guys that I couch surfed was this dude. And this dude was riding through Vegas, and he was like, I'm going to ride all the way to Patagonia on a bike. I'm like, now that's something. Now that's fucking manly. That's what the fucking Bear Grylls, that's the shit I'm missing. And ironically, that guy 6 years later, out of the blue, calls me wasted in Congo, and he goes, yeah, you want to come ride bikes? We've kept some kind of correspondence, but nothing like this, where he's just like, yeah. He goes, I need someone to smuggle some parts in for me.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like...
Parts for bikes?
Yeah, because he finished Patagonia, and then he sold that bike, bought a piece of shit one in South Africa, got to Congo, and this guy was literally living off of bread and water, man. And then he got there, because white dude in Congo speaks four languages, mechanical engineer. They gave him like a state job to manage elevators and escalators and shit. He was getting $90,000 a year, went from nothing to that, and then he was like, yo, I'll bankroll at least a part of it. And I was also running tours as well, so I took a group to Egypt during the pandemic. And while I was in Egypt, I was like, all right, we took them through Egypt, went to like Libyan border, Sudan border, all over. And I also have some really good friends out there. And then he's like, after Egypt, just fly down to Congo. And with all these parts, I'm like, I'll bring my gear. We'll go ride through the jungle for a couple weeks, camp out in the jungle. And I'm like, well, that seems on brand. So, and I'm not someone that's riding single track through the mud like that. Like, but I fucking learned, and that was a wild, like, I've never been in a more wild place than Congo. Like, people like putting AK-47s in my face. Like,
really?
Yeah. Like
to rob you or?
Yeah, no, like almost,
just what the fuck are you doing here kind of thing.
Being white in another country like that really made me feel like I am not welcome here. And it showed me a lot about this whole reverse side of things, being a minority, and feeling also, like all the injustices that happen to a people, you know? And also, like, the fact that I'm just associated based off of that.
Sure.
And I'm like...
automatic enemy.
Yeah, and yeah. I was not in a touristy part. Like, Kinshasa and the DRC is a little bit more modern. That's where, like, the seat of government and all that stuff is. But I'm in the conflict zone in Lubumbashi, which is in the south where all the mines are, cobalt mines, things like that, so lithium. So all of these big cash crops that all the major powers like China and U.S. are fighting over. And you can definitely see that when you're there. And it's just this weird, I saw the plane that I was getting off of remove pallets and pallets of uncirculated U.S. dollars that Chinese businessmen were moving off of the plane by forklift to go buy excavators and stuff from my buddy's company. So they were you're like, huh, this is interesting. And we're going to need a longer show, or I need to come back because I'm just going to keep
you're going. Definitely coming back.
Yeah, but like we'll close off of we can go into detail another time, but I'll just say like, yeah, at the end of my motorcycle trip, I came back and I ended up in this so I went from rags to riches. I was literally sleeping in the just covered in mud for about 2 weeks, crashed again, fucked my ankle up, had to come back a little early for that, but we went straight from just back to his house. Someone said there's a going away party at this mansion, and the most wealthy Lebanese business owner in Lubumbashi was throwing a party. And I went straight fear and loathing on these sons of bitches because I wasn't sober anymore like I was in Nepal. Mm-hmm. I was full tilt. So I went grabbed that 25-year Macallan right off the bar, and I just started sipping on it. And I'm the only one that speaks fluent English in the whole place. Otherwise, everyone speaks French for the most part. And I start just chugging on the bottle, and it feels a little weird because it's like a white party too. So, and it's all white people wearing white, and then the staff is all black, and you're like, this kind of feels very colonial and very weird.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here like literally Hawaiian shirt. Everyone's dressed up nice. And I'm sitting here like Hawaiian shirt looking muddy, just grubby as hell. Like even like my hair is these. I'm just a wreck. But then he tells everybody I'm like a Chippendale because I'm from Vegas, uh-huh. And he knows about the dancing and shit. And I'm fucking walking around with a limp.
Yeah.
And drinking the Macallan. And then they fucking they all start dancing. And they're like, all right, well, can you give the owner's wife a lap dance? And I'm like, yeah, I think I could fucking do that. So I'm going DJ, and at this time, I'm like, this is a 25 Macallan. I'm like, I'm really taking advantage of this. I'm pouring little shots for all the staff. So I'm just putting like little cups for everybody. I'm like, hey, you got to try this shit. Got to get this stuff. And I'm already wasted. I don't even know if they're drinking it, but I kept coming back and just filling it up. And I go and I'm like, put Pony on. I threw the, this girl looks like a barefoot Contessa.
Oh my God.
Like a spinning image, man. I am not even like just, it's barefoot Contessa for all intents and purposes. Like I just pushed this girl on the fucking couch, and it's like a bunch of like higher up people, you know, like upper crust. And I'm just sitting here like, fuck with the gimp leg again with a bottle of Macallan. And I probably, it looks heinous. It's probably not any of my best work. But I'm fucking grinding on her, just sitting here, just like pouring down the, you know, the scotch Oh man, I'm in. I'm like ripping buttons off, fucking whipping my hair in her face. And, oh my God. And yeah, hubby comes home, and then everyone's like, oh, you know, what's gonna happen?
Yeah.
And then he starts dancing with me too, and then it's a whole fucking shit show at that point, because now he's in on it. He's like, man, no one has balls like you. And I'm just like, yeah, dude, I'm just from Vegas, you know, telling the whole story of like, why did I end up meeting this guy, and why am I here? And like, and then it just got, we got, it just got out of hand to the point where we couldn't ride our motorcycles back to the house. And we're like, all right, well, we're not fucking going, right? We're not fucking leaving. And we go to this local party that's just like, it was during the African Cup. Yeah. So like this was 2022. So yeah, so it was big deal. Everyone's watching this, like every event or whatever. I can't remember who was playing. I think it was Morocco. Anyway, so we're out going on this big lawn party, and I am completely obliterated, but I have that bottle with me still. And out there, there's motorcycle taxis. So I'm in the middle, buddy's in the back, and I'm just holding on to this dude for dear life, like, save me. And I'm just, like I said, it starts to rain, and I'm just holding on to him, just like, and the bottle, like, I am never letting go of you, my man. It's intimate at this point. We get to this spot. We're starting to throw some money around. And again, Congo, like, one of the things is, like, you don't know what a cigarette can get you. Like, if you bring some, like, nice cigarettes, not that cheap shit, because I start smoking when I'm out yeah. in the bush now, because it kind of takes the edge off a little bit. I mean, I was smoking the most garbage shit. But if I get a Marlboro, you hand that to a guy,
yeah,
he'll put that gun away, put his arm around you, get you a beer. Like, that's the power of a cigarette.
Wow.
You don't, like, the bartering out there, it's just there's a lot of like, this unspoken respect kind of thing, just understanding that you should be giving something and kind of being like, hey, I know I'm just some random white dude, but I'm not that piece of shit riding around in a Land Rover.
Right.
I'm out here with the fucking muddy boots, fucking right out here with y'all. And that's where you kind of can build that respect. So they let us in. We're at this party. I'm fucking dancing with all these girls and shit. I think I remember very, very faintly of just kind of getting bopped around, people that just dancing with me. And then the fucking rain starts coming down. All the lights go out. I mean, this grid out there is so shit. Like, you get like 30 minutes of power, and then it's just off for fucking 6 hours, and then back on. And like, you just don't know. It's so temperamental all throughout this city. And it's just fucking crazy that you have this elitist kind of thing where there's compounds of the white business owners, and then you can go, the rest of the city is literally living off of about $200-$250 a month with mud floors. You're like, oh my God, wow. I mean, the disparity. And then I was, you know, jumping around, got back on the bike with that guy because we really bonded. He kind of waited out there for me because, you know, I was a meal ticket. You know, I'll pay triple for my fare just to make sure I get home okay. And we get back to the house. And, there was some ladies of the night waiting for us. And I'm going to end it there and leave a little mystere there of what happened. But, that was Congo. And that's literally a couple days later, I flew back and I started contracting malaria. on the way back.
How long does it take to get rid of malaria?
So it has to work through your system like 2 weeks. And
there's nothing they can give you.
There's like so you could take like a placebo, where a placebo kind of gives you like your symptomatic, which is completely rocks you. You're just like in a slump.
Fever, right?
Yeah,
high fever.
Yeah, fever. You sweat. Essentially, and I'm not a doctor, but to my knowledge, malaria attacks your red blood cells.
Yeah.
So it kind of just puts you in the state of fatigue, and then you start like having panic attacks and nightmares and like very visceral night terrors where you're just like, oh, and your whole body starts to kind of clench up because now your red blood cells aren't feeding into your muscles and right. shit. So you're spasming, pains, all this shit. And at the time, I was still being a tour operator for, you know, international trips. So I only had a 4-day layover back in the States before I had to take 10 people down to Tulum. And I tried to contact a doctor, and they're like, well, you can't go get blood work to see the doctor here unless your primary care physician will come see you. And I tried to reach out to my primary care doctor. I hate American healthcare.
It's terrible.
Yeah, the worst.
The worst.
Literally, I can get better treatment in a shack in a Congo. Just like, what do you do? What's wrong with you? Let's diagnose you. Let's figure it out. Granted, for certain things. Maybe not brain surgery.
Right.
Maybe something like basic needs, basic assessments, those kind of things. Like, let's figure out what's wrong with you and get there. Not available. I call them and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I have malaria. They're like, well, the only thing you can go is the ER. And I'm like, brother, like, that's like $3,000 just to walk in. Why would I do that when I know I'm symptomatic? I came from Africa.
I know I have malaria. Yeah.
I'm falling apart, man. And I'm like, all right, do I go to the States or do I try to risk it and fly into Mexico?
Oh, my God. You're psycho.
Patient zero, baby.
Oh, my God.
Patient zero. So I'm like, yo, I contact the hospital in Mexico. They're like, yeah, no problem. We have everything ready for you. You just come in. We'll get your blood work done. Done. Simple. And it's like $100. But I was like, I'm going to just kind of soldier through this. And I try to go to the airport with like a Klonopin. I'm like, I'm just going to wake up when I land, like Drake, but with malaria. And
you were a fucking riot.
It didn't happen like that because I slept past the boarding.
No. In the airport?
Yeah.
Fell asleep in the airport.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then I woke up like sweating and in like night terror mode, and they like the ticketing agent's like, yo, like
they called paramedics.
Yeah, so I get wheeled out in a wheelchair. The girl, my assistant at the time, wheels me to the hospital. My fucking hubris is just never checked, I guess. And so I go in the hospital. I'm like, I got malaria. They're like, this guy's got COVID. He doesn't got malaria.
Because it was during that time.
Oh yeah, so 2022. They're like, no way. No way. And I'm like, check my passport, motherfucker. I just got back from the Congo. They're like, this guy's hallucinating. What the
You're
fuck?
You're like, COVID's a walk in the park compared
to what
I got.
Who goes to the Congo for fun?
Right.
Like, what an idiot. You're like, no way they believe me. They put me in the hospital, bro. And then they're like, they think I'm some junkie. I'm like, I've never taken any kind of narcotic in my life. I've never put anything in my nose. At least a straight shooter when it comes to that. I do drink, but never any kind of controlled substance. And they're like, hey, no, you're a junkie. And I'm like, I'm swinging my little IV, like, I'm in pain. My whole body is just starting to feel like it's like the squeeze. And they just leave me overnight.
Oh my God.
And they don't even tell me I can get up. So I'm like, I'm trying to go to the bathroom and I'm like hitting the door.
Yeah.
But then they think I'm just some, you know, deranged guy. And I'm like, dude, like, my body is fucking just consuming itself right now. And then I just like, I'm like, can I leave the bed? I didn't know how to unplug the machine and go to the bathroom. So I'm just like, I shit myself. It's just a whole mess. And I'm just sitting in that, just fucking shaking in the hospital, hitting the thing. They didn't want to come get me. So the next morning I'm fucking furious. And I'm like, I tell my family, like, this is what happened. Cause they started to come see me. Cause it's not congenial or transferable unless by blood. So it's not like this huge thing where if I spit in your mouth, maybe, but want to, you know, I don't know. But yeah, so at that point I'm sitting here like in the hospital and I'm laid up and I'm like, dude, now I'm thinking, all right, all of these people, I'm like, there, 10 people are going to fucking Mexico without me. I'm sitting in my bed, like, trying to, like, text everybody that, like, all right, someone, who's the matriarch of this group? Like, I'm like, maybe I can salvage this. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, maybe I can buy a ticket for my buddy to go out and host them. And I'm like, I know a guy in Cancun that can I can just pay him, like, whatever. And I'm just trying to do that while going through that nightmare, my man, nightmare. And I tell this army nurse, because he comes in, army nurse, yeah. He goes like, yeah, man, healthcare fucking sucks. And I'm like, discharge me right now. I can't be here fucking another moment. And I went and got my medicine. I just fucking, I lost about like 30 pounds. So I wow. I was about like a 115.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So now I lost all my muscle mass. So like, I mean, not to say like I'm a big muscular dude, but for the little I had, I couldn't even lift up like a 10-pound weight. Like,
no
I
shit.
Couldn't even curl a 10-pound weight. Like, literally, it starts feeding on your muscles, man. And like, I was just completely exhausted. I couldn't even do like a squat unassisted. Like,
for how long?
About 2 weeks. I was bedridden, yeah. And then nearing the end of those 2 weeks, I started to try to go to the gym and try to just. You know, I was like, man, I would get so fatigued just by
quick.
Yeah, just maybe like even doing this, I'm like, fuck, I couldn't wow. do it, man. And like, the CDC came to my house.
Really?
Yeah, I was the third case in 75 years
of malaria
in Nevada. Yeah.
Wow.
Not a hell of a. I'm always a third placer. Bronzer, you know, for sure. But that was not one of those accolades I was so proud of. But like, I mean, it became a fucking story. The group in Mexico ended up being all right as well. Like, they had a blast. I mean, the thing is, it's like, they want a lot of my selling point when I started my first company was myself, right? And you know, people also knew me as this character and this wild guy, like, oh man, he's been a dancer, you know, he's twerked on Miley Cyrus in a chicken costume to fucking going out to Everest almost fucking dying. Like, who is this dude? And I always like to kind of prop myself up as this mysterious guy, but to the point where, you know, as I've gotten older, and this kind of answers your earlier question, isn't enough. And I like to circle back there and be like, you know what? Like, all of these were defining in a way that it showed me that I can be proud of who I am and proud of, you know, what I've been able to accomplish, and try to turn it a little bit more inward and being less about the validation from all of these crazy external things. Because people are like, you're either an idiot or you're my hero, or, you know, and I live to inspire people.
Yeah.
You know, there's some kind of paternal need for me, because, again, not being this family dude, and, you know, and even if you're a religious guy, like, Jacob was like the father of Israel, right?
Yeah.
And I felt like, this, I was religious growing up, and I kind of moved away from it and became more spiritual, especially going through Islam. I spent time in, you know, Tibetan monasteries when I was up in Nepal too, and in Hindu temples, and I've been to a handful of mosques, studied theology, and, you know, I'm like, at the end, I still felt this kind of this role that I wanted to be this paternal thing to many people. And I felt like it was an injustice if I did it just to having one kid, you know, or to having a handful of kids. So I've always tried to be even a pretty sketchy shepherd, let's put it that way. I wouldn't say that I always have the best record and exemplary, but I still have tried to use my medium, whatever it might be, whether it be writing, whether it be dance, or whether it's this adventure stuff, to really expose people to a life that is enthralling at every little piece, you know, and it reminds me now more to see someone else do it for the first time than it does for me to do it, because I feel like I'm kind of like a beat dog at this point.
Right.
A lot of these nuances are, you know, I appreciate them, but it's not like seeing it something for your first time. It's not like that's something like even a shooting star. You know how many I've taken so many people out to go look at the stars, and they fall apart.
Right.
I mean, in a good way, they're like, man, like, this is just so simple.
Sure.
But this could be everything. You know, this can kind of be the aha moment where you're like, I'm going to turn it all around. And COVID was a very big time for that for people. And I felt like that was my calling. Like, that was something, even Strauss and J-Rock, you know, coming out there like, you're a fucking madman. Like, yeah. I would have never thought of anything like this, but it was so simple. And we had such a great time. We connected really well with each other. And these guys have infinitely more accolades than I can ever accrue. You know, these are all things that they are established gentlemen. I'm like, the only way that I feel that I can elevate myself to you guys, at least in the professional world, is by showing you the kind of things that I've been able to accomplish, the things I've done, and the things that I've also inspired people to do.
Jake, I got a text from David Kagan, I think it was 4 or 5 days ago, whenever it was, about you. You got it. He's like, John, you got to have this guy on your show. I didn't really look at the Instagram. He told me he was your partner in the car rental thing. And I purposely don't like to know anything about people. Obviously, sometimes if I know who they are, I know who they are. But I'd rather just find out here. I've done over 250 podcasts. You are hands down my favorite guest ever. Period. It's not even close.
Boom.
And you're right. You're going to have to come back.
Not third place today, so fucking amen.
Man, this was fun.
No, it is. I've always dreamed to be on a podcast. I even tried to do my ghetto one back in the day because I always wanted to tell Vegas' story.
Yeah.
And it's a hard story to tell. You know, many people try to kind of capture it in a way that, you know, it's about the strip or it's about this, but there's such a dynamic, especially the toils of my past and the way that I've seen it just consume things, not just in a detrimental way.
Yeah.
You know, like it's really refined me and also given me this vigor to kind of conquer the world the way I have, which is, like I said, a very unique perspective that even though I've been unhinged and kind of just, you know, rocketing into things, I've also had this very observational experience where I'm really trying to take in people's experience in life and really to see them for what they are, to my best of my ability, and to also engage them in a way that brings something out of them that is internal, not something that's from me. It's something that I'm just kind of trying to have echo within yourself, and I guess that's one of the best ways to explain it. Maybe I could do it a little bit more elegantly, but maybe next time around.
No, it's perfect. On April 12th, every year we do a 24-hour live podcast every year. This year it's April 12th. I would love to have you back for a couple hours, literally, like in the, I don't know if you're a night owl or not, but like if you'd want to come back in the late night hours or anytime, whatever, we'll figure it out. But well,
I don't have a problem talking.
No, so. you're gold, man. It's great. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming in. All right, Jory, it's over. I hate saying that it's over. This was just part one. We'll be back with him again for sure, but go ahead and take us out.